Hey guys, welcome to the Bitcoin Fortress podcast, helping you increase your financial freedom. This is episode 111, recorded here on April 14th, 2024. This podcast is for entertainment only and is not investing advice. So as always, please do your own homework. Well, we'll start with the market update outlook. We'll get into the top Bitcoin news, and then we'll finish up by featuring my latest post on the Bitcoin Fortress Substack. So let's jump right in. The benchmark S&P 500 fell nearly 2% from Monday through Friday, and in the process, it posted its worst weekly performance since late October 2023. The retreat was primarily due to yet another hotter than anticipated consumer price index report published on Wednesday. Investors reacted to the CPI data by dialing back their Federal Reserve rate cut expectations and all but shutting the door on a 25 basis point cut in June. Also grabbing headlines this week were geopolitical tensions in the Middle East and the start of the first quarter earnings season at home. Friday saw results from household names such as JP Morgan, Citi, and Wells Fargo. For the week, the S&P 500 dipped 1.6%. The tech-heavy NASDAQ composite lost ground by 0.5%, and the blue-chip Dow slipped 2.4%. Looking ahead, geopolitics will hold the focus of markets to start the week after Iran's attack on Israel. An Israeli military spokesman said the country is prepared to do, quote, whatever is necessary in its defense. Tehran said it would attack with greater force if there was retaliation. Late Friday saw a flight to safety with money moving from equities to bonds and gold. Oil also gained on possibilities of production disruption in the Middle East. The economic calendar will continue to garner attention following the recent spate of hotter than anticipated labor market and inflation indicators. Investors will be focusing on the March retail sales report scheduled for Monday and a reading on U.S. industrial production on Tuesday. Also on the docket will be housing starts and existing home sales data. The first quarter earnings season will pick up pace next week, and we'll grab a bigger chunk of the spotlight. Most notable name reporting quarterly earnings will be streaming giant Netflix on Thursday. Other major companies across the week include lenders Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Bank of America, health insurer United Health, and pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson, and other Dow 30 components, Travelers, Procter & Gamble, and American Express. Additionally, the cryptocurrency world will be keeping an eye on the expected Bitcoin halving event next week. Geopolitical tensions in the Middle East will be on traders' minds as well after the escalation of conflict between Israel and Iran on Saturday. Jumping into the Bitcoin news, of course, this is top news, and as much as I hate talking about price action, this is probably pretty notable, so it's worth talking about. This is from Bitcoin.com. This was posted about yesterday. Massive Bitcoin market turbulence triggers $4,500 crash. 167 million in Bitcoin longs erased in 1 hour. By 4 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, Bitcoin's price dipped below the $62,000 threshold after hovering around $67,000 for most of the morning's trading sessions. The cryptocurrency experienced a 7.7% decrease within 3 hours, triggered by a flurry of panic selling that started at 1 p.m. 2 week statistics indicate that Bitcoin has fallen 8.7% compared to the U.S. dollar, while trading volume soared to $41.63 billion throughout the day. Around 4:15 p.m., the price stabilized, cooling down to just above the $62,000 mark, with several attempts to climb into the $63,000 range. In total, over a three-hour span, Bitcoin lost $4,500 in value despite some recovery. Hourly liquidations from long positions in Bitcoin alone saw 167.13 million wiped out, with Saturday's total liquidations across the cryptocurrency landscape nearing the billion-dollar mark again. At 4:15, the 24-hour liquidation tally stood at 697.07 million, with 598.91 million from long positions. By 4:25, bears had pushed Bitcoin price back under the $62,000 mark, triggering additional leverage liquidations. Throughout the day, 219,299 traders faced liquidation. The spike in selling pressure could potentially push Bitcoin prices even lower, perpetuating a cycle that hastens the decline. Often such rapid sell-offs are driven more by emotional responses than by thoughtful analysis, leading more traders to sell off in a bid to minimize losses. Additionally, bears are likely to capitalize on this scenario. Presently at 4:45 p.m. on Saturday, Bitcoin is trading at for $62,777 per coin on Bitstamp. And of course, all this leveraged, it means people are trading options. And what ends up happening with those is you get wrecked on both sides. If the price spikes, the shorts get destroyed. If the price tanks, the longs get destroyed. And that's why here we never really advocate for any of that, even though it's a great way to make quick money. It's a lot like gambling. And so you should really avoid that and just buy your Bitcoin. In fact, I mean, this is a great dip, and a lot of people were talking about buying this dip in order to continue to accumulate Bitcoin at, you know, relatively lower price than where it was trading not too long ago. The other thing to note, now this is, as we're recording this, Bitcoin's recovered to $64,000. There is 781 blocks left to go until the halving, which the block subsidy will get cut in half from 6.25 to 3.125 Bitcoin. That is now projected to be April 19th. We are at block height 839219 as we're recording this. The lesson here, I guess, as always, whenever there's a big flush or a big spike, I mean, Bitcoin can also go up $10,000 very quickly as well, is the best thing to do. Dollar cost average, buy and hodl. Next article is from Bitcoin.com. Also, this was posted a couple days ago. This is an update on BlackRock. $10.5 trillion asset manager BlackRock's spot Bitcoin ETF now holds 270,000 Bitcoin. BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, released its financial results on Friday for the first quarter ended March 31st, showing a record $10.5 trillion in assets under management, an increase of $1.4 trillion from the previous year. The asset manager's spot Bitcoin exchange-traded fund, the iShares Bitcoin Trust, or ticker symbol IBIT, has maintained a dominant position in the U.S. spot Bitcoin ETF market as of April 11th. IBIT's Bitcoin holdings stood at approximately 269,314 Bitcoin with a notional value of over $18.9 billion. Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, recently said that IBIT is the fastest growing ETF in the history of ETFs. He added that he is very bullish on the long-term viability of Bitcoin and is pleasantly surprised by the retail demand for BlackRock's spot Bitcoin ETF. But of course, we don't recommend that you buy ETFs because that's just not your Bitcoin. That's basically paper Bitcoin. So the best thing to do is buy your Bitcoin and hold it in self-custody, cold storage, preferably multi-sig. Collaborative custody is sort of what I found to be the best. And just forget about it. Just let it sit there. Time is on your side. Last week, BlackRock filed an amendment to its IBIT prospectus, revealing that the fund now has 9 authorized participants. They are ABN AMRO Clearing USA, Citadel Securities, Citigroup Global Markets, Goldman Sachs, Jane Street Capital, JP Morgan Securities, Macquarie Capital USA, UBS Securities, and Virtu Emeritas. So everybody wants to get in on the action because there's money to be made here for Wall Street. BlackRock has also filed an application with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to launch a spot Ether ETF. Despite some optimism surrounding potential SEC approval of spot Ether ETF applications by May's deadline, skepticism is growing. Jan Van Eck, CEO of investment firm Van Eck, recently expressed his doubts, anticipating the rejection of his firm's application in May. Moreover, there are reports that the SEC may be trying to classify Ether as a security. Fink, however, believes that even if ETH is classified as a security, BlackRock can still launch a spot Ether ETF. On Thursday, financial technology firm and stablecoin provider Circle introduced smart contract capabilities aimed at enabling holders of the BlackRock USD Institutional Digital Liquidity Fund to exchange their shares for USDC through Circle. So if I don't recommend that you invest in the Bitcoin ETF, I definitely don't recommend that you invest in the Ether ETF, because that is a shitcoin. And it's, you know, nobody knows what the supply is. And of course, it's run by, you know, an insider group. And but this is a great opportunity for Wall Street to make even more money, because what happens, of course, with Ethereum is if you own a whole bunch of it, you become a staker. You know, you basically participate in the protocol. That's proof of stake. And so you get paid for that. And that's yield. And of course, you know, Wall Street, in addition to collecting fees on managing the fund, can probably also collect the yield on the staking that's paid out by the network, and then pay you a little bit, so they can offer an investor a yield on their crypto, and pocket the rest, and they can make even more money on an Ether ETF than they can make on Bitcoin ETF. So my advice is, if they do get, they'll get it approved. I mean, come on, there's money to be made. They're going to approve it. So just stay away. Next up is from Crypto Potato, one of my favorite websites to check out. This was posted today. Kind of some interesting news. Venture capital interest in Bitcoin startups has exploded, according to research. Despite venture capital activity declining across the board, funding for Bitcoin startups has more than quadrupled in 2023, according to a new report. Research from Trammell Venture Partners shows that the number of Bitcoin-native pre-seed deals ballooned 360% last year, while the number of funded Bitcoin companies rose by 56.9%. As explained in TVP's Friday report, and there's a link to that here in the article, which I will include a link to the article in the show notes, as always, a Bitcoin native company is a firm whose product success is mutually aligned with that of the Bitcoin network, and which is founded on the principle that Bitcoin is the global monetary asset of the future. That includes early stage startup companies, but discounts late stage firms, Bitcoin miners, and crypto oriented companies. With the absolute number of Bitcoin venture dollars invested fell 12.5% to $305 million in 2023, the count of Bitcoin venture deals rose 69.2%. By contrast, the equivalent numbers for the crypto industry were down 64.5% and down 35.3% in terms of the number of deals, respectively. Crypto venture deals still outnumber Bitcoin ones by about 20 to 1. Of course, there's shitcoinery, you know, is a easy exit for the VCs. So, and if there's still a market for it, then why not? Though the uptick of the latter last year was substantial, some of last year's big investors included General Catalyst, Y Combinator, and Draper Associates, the early stage VC firm run by longtime Bitcoin bull Tim Draper. While 2023 was a challenging year for the broader venture capital landscape, the Bitcoin native sector not only weathered the storm, but emerged stronger, wrote TVL to X on Friday. The future looks bright for Bitcoin native startups. The surge in funding coincides with a revival of developer activity on Bitcoin over the past year, sparked by new technological capabilities discovered on the network. These include the NFT protocol Ordinals, which we don't really like, the Bitcoin computing paradigm BitVM, which I do find interesting, and the upcoming Runes protocol. Don't know much about it, but not sure I like it, which will allow for efficient tokens to be issued on Bitcoin. Yeah, no. I don't like it. But again, we can't really stop. Bitcoin is for friends and enemies. the network is going to be used in many different ways. And I guess we just have to accept the fact that there's going to be all kinds of stuff going on there, including shitcoining, and we just need to be alert. Ordinals activity began to surge again this week, as did the average cost to transact on Bitcoin. In case you weren't following that, then yes, the Bitcoin fees have gone up or spiked recently. Rising fees of more developers in search of ways to build more effective Bitcoin Layer 2 solutions to enable more efficient transfers and funding is moving in that direction. Anecdotally, I've never seen more Bitcoin startups in my career, said Coinmetrics co-founder Nick Carter on Friday. Pace right now is at least an order of magnitude greater than it's ever been. So I think this is all really good news. And we like to see money flowing into Bitcoin only, even though sometimes Bitcoin only involves shitcoining, Layer 2, Lightning Network, other things like that, BitVM, all very interesting, very helpful, especially the Layer 2 protocols in terms of being able to transfer value for a low cost instead of transferring on chain, which at times can be quite expensive. And over time, I think we'll just get to be more expensive as there's more volume on Layer 1. Okay, next article is from bitcoinnews.com. This article was posted on April 12th. Bitcoin mining difficulty surges to all-time high as halving nears. As the highly anticipated Bitcoin halving event draws near, the mining landscape witnesses a significant surge in complexity, with Bitcoin mining difficulty hitting a new all-time high of 85.51 trillion, as per data by bitinfocharts.com. And there's a little chart included in here. Of course, we've seen Bitcoin mining difficulty more or less going up constantly since the beginning. Took a little dip there in, let's call it mid to late 2021, when China banned mining and all those miners came offline, and then it just resumed its growth and is now almost going parabolic. The latest adjustment, which occurred on April 10th, reflected a 3.4 increase from the previous difficulty level of 83 trillion set on March 28th. Analysts expect this adjustment to be the last one before the upcoming halving. The next Bitcoin mining difficulty adjustment is projected to happen in around 13 days on April 24th. Meanwhile, the Bitcoin halving, as we mentioned earlier, currently is projected for April 19th, which is just 8 days away. Actually, 5 days away now. Bitcoin mining difficulty serves as a crucial metric measuring the level of effort required to mine new blocks or find blocks with hashes within the target range as instructed by Bitcoin's proof of work consensus mechanism. This adjustment, occurring roughly every 2016 blocks or 2 weeks, aims to maintain a target block time. They call it an average block time of 10 minutes. So, we will see some blocks coming in faster than that, some coming in slower than that when you study the block explorer, but the average is, the average. The surge in mining difficulty is closely correlated with the Bitcoin blockchain hash rate, representing miners' computational power in generating new blocks and minting new Bitcoin. Notably, the hash rate has experienced a substantial increase, soaring from around 690 exahash per second on March 28th to 696 exahash per second on April 10th. Despite the difficulty reaching all-time high, the hash rate had previously peaked at 727.9 exahash per second on March 24th, so it's down a little bit. Notably, analysts anticipate a significant impact on mining operations post-halving, citing potential efficiency reductions. A February report by Galaxy Research speculates that post-halving, around 15 to 20% of Bitcoin's current hash rate, coming from eight types of application-specific integrated circuit models, may go offline as miners deactivate rigs due to diminished profitability. Similarly, a report by Bitfinex notes that the challenges independent miners can face with the upcoming halving. It illustrates how Wall Street investment has reshaped Bitcoin mining incentives, favoring corporate profitability over decentralized ideals. With the 2024 halving looming, independent miners face difficulties in negotiating energy deals or upgrading equipment. Bitfinex underscores the importance of innovation and collaboration for independent miners to thrive. And that pretty much wraps that one up. So, good idea to keep an eye on Bitcoin mining activity. I think in the last couple of halvings, there has been a reduction in hash rate as miners have gone offline. There's really two schools of thought on that. Some people say miners are more efficient now, they have better equipment, and they're better prepared to weather the reduction in the block reward. And of course, if you think about it, as we sit here today, if the Bitcoin price were to double, say, over the next year, that would, give the miners the same amount of fiat that they're getting now, even though the block reward is cut in half. So you kind of have to bear that in mind as well. And a doubling in the Bitcoin price over the next year, post-halving, is not ridiculous, let's just say. So, next article, also from bitcoinnews.com. This was posted on April 12th. The Paraguayan Senate considers reversal of Bitcoin mining ban. Paraguayan senators are now opting to pause the development of a proposed Bitcoin mining ban. They have shifted their focus towards the potential economic advantages of leveraging excess energy from the country's Itaipu Dam hydropower plant to fuel Bitcoin mining operations rather than exporting it to neighboring Brazil and Argentina. The decision to reassess the proposed ban comes just a week after lawmakers introduced a draft bill on April 4th suggesting a 180-day prohibition on Bitcoin mining. The rationale behind the ban stemmed from allegations of illegal digital asset mines silently consuming power and disturbing the country's electricity supply. If enacted, the initial proposal for a mining ban could significantly impact major industry players like Marathon Digital Holdings, which launched a 27-megawatt project near the Itaipu hydroelectric power plant in November of 2023. Senator Lilian Samaniego confirmed during an April 10 Senate session that a comprehensive debate will be convened in a public hearing scheduled for April 23rd. The hearing aims to delve into the intricacies of Bitcoin mining in the South American country, weighing its benefits against perceived drawbacks. Notably, the Itaipu Dam, one of Paraguay's primary energy sources, generates a staggering 14 gigawatts of power evenly distributed between Paraguay and Brazil. However, Paraguay currently utilizes only a fraction of this capacity, with the surplus sold to Brazil at a loss. On April 8th, Paraguayan lawmakers greenlit a declaration endorsing local and foreign investment infrastructure. Senator Celine Buzarcas expressed optimism that this declaration would spur the Paraguayan Ministry of Industry to explore the economic potential of redirecting excess energy to Bitcoin miners. In a compelling letter addressed to Congress on April 8th, Buzarcas highlighted the potential financial benefits associated with Bitcoin mining operations, with 45 licensed digital asset miners projected to contribute $48 million to the National Electricity Administration by 2024. This figure is expected to soar to $125 million by 2025 as miners expand their operations. Notably, Paraguay currently sells excess energy to Brazil at a subsidized rate of $10 per megawatt hour. Buzarcas suggested that if the country instead sells this energy to local Bitcoin miners at a rate of $40 per megawatt hour, ANDE could attain a remarkable 45% net profit margin. This translates to an annual revenue of $73 million and an additional $17 million in value-added tax for the Treasury. The senator explained that embracing Bitcoin mining could fortify ANDE's financial stability, stating, "This flow of funds is what's going to save ANDE from going bankrupt to be able to invest more in infrastructure and not raise the rate for Paraguayans." The potential benefits extend beyond financial gains, as digital asset mining could also catalyze job creation and bolster the local economy, emphasized Buzarcas during the Senate session. So this is a textbook case of why Bitcoin mining is helpful when you have an energy source that's producing excess energy and you can monetize that energy instead of selling it at a loss to your neighbor. So hopefully it's good to see at least there's a debate about this, and hopefully they will see the light, as it were. Next article is also from Bitcoin.com News. This was posted on April 12th. Article's entitled Supply Shock: Bitcoin Demand Surpasses Issuance at Unprecedented Pace. As the highly anticipated Bitcoin halving event approaches, the market is abuzz with excitement. Recent reports indicate a significant surge in demand for Bitcoin, potentially signaling a supply shock that could drive prices higher in the near future. According to data from CryptoQuant, demand for Bitcoin from long-term holders, often referred to as HODLers, has surpassed miner issuance for the first time in history. This unprecedented phenomenon suggests a notable shift in Bitcoin's supply-demand dynamics. Analysts note that the cohort of long-term holders is adding around 200,000 Bitcoin per month, far exceeding the monthly issuance of approximately 28,000 Bitcoin. CryptoQuant head of research, Julio Marino, emphasizes the significance of this trend, stating demand for the flagship digital asset has become more important than supply. Interestingly, the data reveals that known data exchange addresses now hold only 9.8% of Bitcoin's total circulating supply, indicating a decline in supply on exchanges as investors adopt a long-term holding strategy. The diminishing supply of Bitcoin on exchanges could potentially lead to a supply shock if demand were to suddenly surge. A supply shock occurs when the readily available supply of an asset on exchanges abruptly drops while demand increases. This buying pressure could drive prices higher, particularly as short sellers are forced to cover their positions to avoid liquidation. The impending Bitcoin halving event adds another layer of significance to the current market dynamics. Scheduled to occur on April 20th, the halving will cut the Coinbase reward miners receive per block found in the network in half, reducing it to 3.125 Bitcoin. This halving, programmed into Bitcoin's monetary policy to occur once every 210,000 blocks, or approximately every 4 years, effectively halves the supply of newly minted Bitcoin entering the market. Opinions among digital asset executives vary regarding the potential impact of the halving event. Arthur Hayes, former head of BitMEX, anticipates price declines before and after the halving, citing limited dollar liquidity during this period. However, Marathon CEO Fred Thiel suggests that the halving's impact may already be priced in, pointing to successful spot exchange traded funds approvals as evidence. Historical data on previous halving events provides insights into potential market trends. In each instance of historical halvings, Bitcoin prices have surged, reaching higher highs and higher lows. Analysts emphasize the importance of considering supply and demand dynamics in evaluating Bitcoin's performance. As the Bitcoin halving event approaches, the market is witnessing a surge in demand, potentially signaling a supply shock that could drive prices higher. With demand outpacing miner issuance and decreasing exchange reserves, market dynamics suggest a bullish outlook for Bitcoin in the near future. And then there's a nice chart actually in this article if you want to check it out. And it actually the chart's entitled "Bitcoin Price History: Diminishing Returns Per Halving Epoch." So what it's saying is that, the price doesn't peak as high, which, I guess it makes sense as Bitcoin becomes more expensive and gets more traction. The first epoch, it was 40x. The second epoch was 20x. The third epoch was 10x. So we'll see what the fourth epoch is, but we'll probably, if this trend holds, we'll probably be maybe, I don't know, 5x, which, nobody's going to complain about that. Okay, next article is also from BitcoinNews.com. This was posted on April 11th. Article's entitled, "Is Bitcoin Legal? The Futility of Trying to Ban Math and Code." And this is an opinion piece I thought was worth sharing. When it comes to the world's most sound money, one question that often gets asked is Bitcoin legal? This question fundamentally misunderstands the nature of this new digital asset and the futility of trying to outlaw math code and free expression. At its core, Bitcoin is simply a protocol that allows for the transfer of value over the internet without intermediaries. It is an open source software released in 2009 by the pseudonymous Satoshi Nakamoto. The Bitcoin network is decentralized and distributed across thousands of nodes with no centralized authority. So what exactly would it mean to declare Bitcoin illegal? Governments can certainly make it illegal to engage in certain activities involving Bitcoin, such as operating unlicensed exchanges. However, they cannot realistically ban or stop people from using the open source software protocol itself. The most authoritarian government on earth tried banning it, and it wasn't successful. Miners simply unplugged and went elsewhere. Others even ran the risk to stay in China and keep mining. Banning Bitcoin is hard. Bitcoin operates based on principles of cryptography, decentralized consensus, and game theory. It is simply a language, like a form of encrypted communication. Can a government realistically outlaw math or the use of a particular code or language? It's akin to trying to ban the use of a certain type of encrypted messaging app. People will find ways around such bans. There is no Bitcoin company to raid or server to shut down that will take down the entire network. Bitcoin lives on thousands of node computers around the world. Even if every government simultaneously made it illegal and tried to shut it down, people would simply run nodes in their basements or host them offshore. The genie is out of the bottle. Moreover, declaring Bitcoin illegal would run counter to core principles of free expression and freedom of information exchange. It would be a radical form of censorship akin to trying to ban books or websites. Code is speech, which is a protected form of expression in democratic societies. Rather than trying to ban unstoppable technologies, a more prudent approach for governments is to develop sensible regulations around Bitcoin on-ramps and off-ramps where fiat currency enters and exits the system. This provides a balanced approach that fosters innovation while enforcing rules around consumer protection. While seeing this would be nice, many in authoritarian regimes aren't holding their breath. While it's nice to be able to use fiat on and off ramps, people can still transact peer-to-peer if they're deplatformed from said off ramps. So to answer the initial flawed question, it makes no sense to ask if the technology itself is legal or not. Bitcoin is simply a protocol for communication, not subject to legality or bans any more than a government could ban the practice of encryption or speaking in code. Trying to outlaw Bitcoin would be a devastating form of censorship and an exercise in futility in a world of distributed, decentralized networks. So, very nice piece. Totally agree. Okay, and then we'll wrap up here with an article from Bitcoin Magazine. This article is entitled Quality Money. Bitcoin to become scarcer than gold post-halving. For the first time since its inception, Bitcoin's annual inflation rate is poised to become less than that of gold, a quintessential store value. At Bitcoin block height 840,000, the annual supply of Bitcoin will be cut in half, resulting in a decrease in its annual inflation rate from 1.7% to 0.85%. In comparison, the supply of gold is estimated to increase by 1 to 2% per year, depending on technological changes and economic conditions. To date, Bitcoin has experienced three halving events. November 28, 2012, Bitcoin's block subsidy decreased from 50 Bitcoin per block to 25 per block. July 9th, 2016, the second Bitcoin halving decreased the block subsidy from 25 Bitcoin per block to 12.5 Bitcoin per block. May 20th, 2020, the third Bitcoin halving reduced the block subsidy from 12.5 Bitcoin per block to 6.25 per block. The upcoming fourth Bitcoin halving is projected to occur on, well, now it's April 19th, this article says April 20th, and with it, the newly supplied Bitcoin per block will decrease from 6.25 to 3.125 Bitcoin. This epoch, a period of 210,000 blocks, or approximately 4 years, will see Bitcoin supply increase by 164,250 Bitcoin, from 19,687,500 to 20,671,875, a mere 28,124 Bitcoin from the maximum supply limit of 21 million. One benchmark often used to underscore the store value function is that the value of an ounce of gold matches the price of a fine man's suit over time. This principle, known as gold to decent suit ratio, can be traced back to ancient Rome, where the cost of a top-of-the-line toga was said to be equivalent to an ounce of gold. After 2,000 years, the amount of gold you would pay for a high-quality suit is still close to the price of an equivalent ancient Roman toga. While gold has held remarkably true to the expectation of procuring a fine man's suit for its holders over the years, the lustrous yellow metal does come with its challenges. For example, the cost of verification or assaying gold requires it either be dissolved in a solution or melted down. This is certainly a challenge for someone who wants to purchase everyday household goods with their hard-fought store value. Additionally, the cost and onerous nature of transporting and storing gold itself arguably led to the demise of the gold standard. While certificates of deposit were historically redeemable for gold, the underlying commodity was often rehypothecated, resulting in the infamous Nixon shock in 1971 when the United States left the gold standard for good. This is not to mention the risks that come from securing physical gold, its physical nature again proving a risk and liability in serving its function as currency. Executive Order 6102 comes to mind when then President Franklin Delano Roosevelt prohibited the hoarding of gold coin, highlighting the unique challenge of adequately and privately securing precious metals to store value. Initially regarded as a speculative asset due to its notable price fluctuations in the early days, Bitcoin has increasingly been adopted as a store of value. Today, investors recognize its potential worth and superior qualities as a monetary asset. Bitcoin represents the discovery of digital scarcity while offering a range of use cases far beyond those of precious metals. As such, Bitcoin has become a significant force in the economy in just 15 years, reaching a market cap of $1.4 trillion on March 13, 2024. While this growth cannot be monocausally ascribed to the fact that Bitcoin satisfies the requirements of a store of value better than gold, it is certainly promising. This magic internet money continues to rapidly gain on gold's estimated $15.9 trillion market capitalization. Scarcity. Bitcoin has a finite supply of 21 million coins, which makes it resistant to the arbitrary inflation that ails traditional currencies and the market-driven supply of precious metals. Durability. Bitcoin is purely data-based, immutable form of money. Its digital ledger system uses proof of work and economic incentives to resist any attempts to alter it, ensuring it remains a reliable store value over time, barring unforeseen catastrophic tail risks. Given its informational nature, the ability to store Bitcoin despite the attempts of adversaries to prevent you from doing so is another positive monetary attribute. Immutability. Once the transaction is confirmed and recorded on the Bitcoin blockchain, it is incredibly difficult, though not impossible, to alter or reverse. This immutability, derived from the geographical distribution of Bitcoin's network of nodes and miners, is a critical feature. It ensures that the integrity of the ledger is maintained, and transactions cannot be tampered with or falsified. This is especially important in an increasingly digital world where trust and security are paramount concerns. Bitcoin's rise as a monetary good, predictable, free of terminal inflation, and easily transferable, has contributed to it gaining acceptance as a store of value among holders. With the upcoming halving, its scarcity will surpass gold's for the first time and will likely serve as a wake-up call for market participants seeking to avoid the drag of monetary debasement. While there are no certainties in life, and especially none in investing, the near certainty that Bitcoin provides in its ability to maintain the integrity of its 21 million supply cap through its decentralized nature continues to drive adoption one block at a time. Gold had a good run, but with the halving on the horizon, it's Bitcoin's time to shine. So, this article makes a lot of really good points, and probably the most important one is just that the supply issuance now is below that of gold. So it is currently scarcer than gold, and ultimately it's infinitely scarcer than gold, because there's a cap on the total supply versus gold doesn't really have a cap, right? They can just keep digging it out of the ground or out of the floor of the ocean or mining it from asteroids if that ever comes to pass. So there's still plenty of gold out there. And that will wrap it up. I did want to mention this week's featured post on the Bitcoin Fortress Substack. I will include a link to this in the show notes as well as links to all the other articles that I reviewed today. This article is called Bitcoin Adoption Update, April 2024. So about a year ago, I'd done a pretty comprehensive review of Bitcoin adoption across a number of different metrics. And so this one is an update on that. So looking at number of Bitcoin addresses, institutional government, ownership, the Lightning Network, regulatory environment, transaction volume, search volume, Bitcoin ATMs, merchant adoption, and all that sort of thing. So pretty comprehensive look. So check it out if you're interested. And with that, it's a short one this week. We will wrap it up. So thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please like and leave a comment. Also, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. My favorite app is Fountain. So and you're, if you listen to Fountain, you get to earn sats just for listening, which is fantastic. You can follow my Substack at bitcoinfortress.substack.com. And you can also follow me on Nostr. I am Nostr only. I don't go on any other social media. And my NPub is included in the show notes. And with that, I will talk to y'all next week. Bye bye.